Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, October 7th.
Sure.
6th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in a special dual podcast live broadcast with Citizen Radio.
And some random woman you bumped into on the street.
We just bumped into somebody here in Zuccotti Park, now renamed Liberty Park, Liberty Plaza, Liberty Square in downtown New York.
Yep.
In the Wall Street area. First off, Jamie Kilstein, Allison Kilkenny.
Hello. Welcome. Allison says Zuccotti Park is this park's slave name.
It is. It should be called Liberty Plaza.
And we are also very fortunate to have bumped into Naomi Klein, who is sort of bringing it from Canada to fight. Welcome to this dual
Thank
live
you.
Broadcast.
Thank you. I have a question, Sam.
Yes, you just got to back off the mic a little bit. We are set up here with battery power, and this is...
It's gorilla.
It's very gorilla.
Yes.
So, seeing as it's a joint podcast, what's the swearing rule?
Oh, yeah. Swear.
It's okay?
Yeah. Today, okay. Folks, when we invite Citizen Radio on, we already know that our explicit rating, this is the one time why we have an explicit
you
rating.
You play by our rules, yeah. Motherfuckers.
That's the way it goes, folks.
Last time I was on the radio with them, they swore so much I was blushing.
Really?
Well, what's funny is we tried to be really professional with you, too, because we were such a fan, like, intellectually of your work.
That was the good version, yeah.
That was us holding back.
I'm very squeamish about swearing. Like, when I go on the Bill Maher show, I don't swear.
Just
I want
cower?
To.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have never sworn. I know.
That
I'm going to try.
That
maybe this
when
will
you
be
do unleash
time.
It, it's going to be epic. Like, okay. You're going to be, like, flipping desk over, just like, fuck everybody.
So I'm Canadian.
Yeah, they don't do that.
Oh, that's right.
You swear in Canada, they don't even know what you're referring
right, maybe
to.
Maybe ruffle a couple coasters.
All right, so, Naomi, first off, I had the mild misfortune of being in Washington, D.C. yesterday. You guys, the three of you, were here last night.
Yeah.
And first off, Naomi, give me a sense of just how bizarre this is in the context of where we were in terms of this type of protest just even months ago.
Well, I mean, it's bizarre and it's not bizarre in the sense that, you know, while the U.S. media keeps saying, you know, why are they protesting? What do they want? The rest of the world is going, what took you so long? I mean, it's kind of amazing that this hasn't happened earlier, that it didn't happen in 2008. And I think the only reason it didn't is just because of the particular obsession in this country with electoral politics and the love affair with Obama and the fact that progressives were sitting on their hands for way too long while the, you know, biggest heist in monetary history took place, you know, right where we're standing or in the building surrounding us. So, you know, the rest of the world is saying, welcome to the club. You know, we've been on the streets protesting the attempts to stick us with the bill for the bankers' crisis, you know, in Greece, in Italy, in Spain, and everywhere in Europe. And then you have the Arab Spring. There was a fantastic banner up yesterday that said Arab Spring, European Summer, American Fall. Nice. Yeah. And it's clear that people have been waiting for this in this country because it's been like a dam breaking, right? I mean, people are just like, just the fact that this open space has been created has just been a magnet and everybody's coming. And it's really beautiful to watch, especially beautiful to watch the unions kind of get out of their comfort zone and just be so happy that there's this energy coming from a new generation of activists. I'm always amazed about this ritual in this country, and it's not just this country, but of greeting a new generation of activists, of politically engaged young people, with just massive derision and mockery. It's inspiring, and people see through that.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, a big part of the problem is the media just doesn't know how to cover this because it doesn't have a traditional hierarchy or traditional leadership of any kind. So when they show up and they say, "Where's your leader?" and this group says, "We're a democratic movement," the media, because they're not covering a horse race political situation, because they're not throwing their weight behind President Obama, just sort of doesn't know how to cover it. So they end up, deriding it. They end up saying, they're just a drum circle, pot-smoking hippies, when if you spend more than 5 minutes here, you can tell that's not the case.
Yeah, I feel like the media's rule is like, well, if Mark Halperin can't write about it, I don't know what to do. Do you know what I mean? Because when you brought up the unions, we had this great experience yesterday when we were interviewing people for Ali's article for The Nation, where we interviewed these three teachers from the teachers union, and they said exactly what you said, and it was so awesome. Where they're retired and they're comfortable because they were in a union, and they were talking about how inspired they were to see all these young kids. And we've heard the exact opposite on CNN, where they're making fun of the kids for pot smoking or playing bongos. And so to hear actual people, not CNN pundits who used to work on Wall Street, when you hear actual people say how proud they are of the kids, that's really exciting. But some unions are still really squeamish. We talked to two construction workers whose union didn't come, but electrical workers who didn't come, but they came with their hats on anyway.
Let's talk about that for a second, because, the Kevin Drum had a great piece, I think, about 6 months ago in the, I think it was in the Washington Monthly, and I think it was called Plutocracy Now. And he was talking about the cleave that took place between the unions and essentially the, if you want to call it, well, the hippies, but the social emancipation protest that took place and the anti-war protest that took place back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that was the beginning of the end of the sort of synchronicity between unions and the Democratic Party. And 30 years later, we have 25% less, in real terms, of how many private workers are unionized in this country. What accounts for the fact that you can have this type of socially diverse, diverse in terms of agenda, but now begin to attract union support? I mean, are there demographic things at play? Are the issues that they're here for different now than they may have been 30 years ago?
Well, I think having economic justice front and center is a difference. But I think part of what's going on is the American left has been decimated, right? We are in the rubble, stand in the rubble of decades of attacks on the organized left, whether it's McCarthyism, COINTELPRO, this ongoing attacks on trade unions. And so we don't, and then the effects of living in this corporate economy that is being protested means that, these people here don't have workplaces to organize. They're lucky if they get a contract, right? So this economic model isolates us and makes us very, very hard to organize. And unions don't know how to deal with that. And this has been the crisis of unionism in the age of globalization, is just trying to figure out how to do this. So none of us know how to do what we're trying to do, right? I mean, if you're in Egypt and you want to overthrow Mubarak, that's a pretty straightforward thing. Right now in Egypt, the young people who put their lives on the line to overthrow their dictator are trying to figure out how they can also have any kind of economic self-determination in a country that is wholly owned by corporations. And that's way more complicated, right? So this is very, everyone's beyond their comfort zones and trying to figure out how to do this. And that's why these demands, come up with, your agenda right now. I think it's so misguided, because there are plenty of NGOs out there who have demands, and lots of them are good and lots of them are sensible. They're pretty tame as well. They're not really going to get at the heart of inequality in this country. So what is happening here is something that Wes Jackson describes as the process of asking questions for which we don't have the available answers. We really don't.
And let me ask you, but is it the responsibility of a protest like this to even come up with those answers? I mean, from my perspective, there are people here who have gathered here because they have common grievances. They have a common situation. They have common frustration. And frankly, their message, it seems to me, their demand is, we're not going to leave until the establishment and the elites figure out how to satisfy those grievances. Because this, you know, obviously there are people, you know, Joe Stiglitz has been down here and doing teach-ins, and you're having more and more left-leaning economists coming down and speaking to people and organizers. But at the end of the day, there's plenty of answers. Everyone knows. Everyone could come up with a list of 30 different things that could be done to improve the economy, to make the society more equal. Is it really the responsibility of these people to provide those answers? And even if they did,
right,
would anybody pay attention?
Well, that's what's so maddening, that the question isn't being phrased as, why hasn't Congress come up with anything yet? It's, why haven't this group that's been here for 2 weeks come up with a radical new paradigm for the country? Like, it's a silly question, don't you think?
Right.
But yeah. Still, like, my concern a little bit is that I don't want people to react against this demand for demands by sort of making a fetish of formlessness. Because, in talking about, okay, what does it mean that we're standing in the rubble of these steady attacks on the left, right? It means we don't have there is no institutional left, really. We have NGOs, and the criticism, and we have issues, and everybody's very siloed in their issues. And everyone's really slick. And this thing that is the reason why this group is being criticized so much is because they're not more like an NGO. Where are your poll-tested, messages and you're ready for TV spokespeople? So those groups all have that, but what they don't have is a mass movement behind them. What's being built here is a mass movement. I mean, that's clearly the goal. That's clearly the energy of it. And once you find out how powerful you are, then you can figure out how much you can demand. I mean, this is why I think it would be a shame to, take Nick Kristof's advice, and turn this into, a series of policy wonk, demands to make pretty small changes on Wall Street. But that said, I think we made a big mistake in the so-called anti-globalization movement of not doing enough to build our own institutional strength and lock in some of what we're building. It meant that when 9/11 happened and there was a big security crackdown and the unions got spooked and the coalitions fell apart, we kind of evaporated because we didn't leave down anything firm. So I hope that something firm comes out of this. I'm just not in a rush.
Yeah. That's actually brings me to my next question, because I can't help but wonder if we are not now, in that regard, in a post 9/11 era, because this is to have this over the past, 5 or 6 years would have been in some ways unimaginable. And I think there would have been a lot less willingness for the general population, to the extent that they're actually getting a view on what's going on here, to hold the police accountable for their behavior in this context at a time so close to 9/11.
Right.
And,
our movement. Which was not an anti-globalization movement. It was an anti-corporate movement, just like this. And, I remember the moment when there was a protest because Davos, in solidarity with New York, decided to have their annual meeting in New York City rather than in Switzerland.
Right.
And there were protests down on Wall Street, and the optics of being so near to Ground Zero and being against Wall Street was seen as quasi-terrorists. And that totally spooked the movement. We had been going after the symbols of corporate power. I remember on 9/11, Silvio Berlusconi, who had just hosted the G8 protest where there had been more than a million people
right.
in the streets, he said the people who attacked the Trade Center are the same people who just protested in Genoa. It's the same spirit.
So shitty. So
absolutely, you're right, Sam. I mean, this is something has changed in this city, that there's now space again to go after the most powerful forces in this
country. And it's not just in the city. I was interviewing a couple of weeks ago the filmmaker of If a Tree Falls about the Earth Liberation Front. And this was a sense that they had that was expressed in the movie, that as the anti-globalization protests were starting and as, what was the FBI brand's eco-terrorism grew, you had we're going to have a little, we have a house band that's going to be starting up shortly.
Well, I think one of the things is, I mean, you know, last year we couldn't get a community center built here. I think one of the things is things have gotten so bad. When things are so bad that my parents are calling me and be like, are you holding those assholes accountable? Then things, you know, it's starting to really spread. And to go back to what you were talking about before, I don't like this pressure being put on. You know what? A lot of these people do know what they want, but a lot don't. And I think that's okay because a lot of them are scared. A lot of them don't have a way to take care of their family and just kind of say, all right, well, I can go here because people who are in my situation are doing something and I can sleep here. And then they're like, well, what are your exact demands? They're like, you know what? I don't know, but I'm trying to do something. And I think that's really important. You know, anyone who's been criticizing the movement on Twitter or, you know, I reply to all of them and I'm like, are you a billionaire? Do you have billions of dollars? Because if you don't have billions of dollars, these people are here sticking up for you. They're sleeping here. They're sticking up for you. And I think that's huge. I mean,
I
seen
hope
anything
if
like
they
it.
Answer in the positive, you ask them to become a member.
Give
of
me
at
money.
Least Citizen Radio.
Give me all of your
and
money.
The Majority Report.
That was nice during the march yesterday, actually, was seeing people on tourist buses cheering,
yes,
giving peace signs.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that I've never seen in an economic justice protest in this country.
No.
That was quite a story. Maybe you'd see it in an anti-war protest. But at a protest that is taking aim at Wall Street, having it just be something that tourists would want
right.
to join into, that was a breakthrough, I thought.
And let me ask you about this, about, you know, because one of the things that I think we witnessed with Wisconsin was you had a moment as these protests in Wisconsin were growing where there was talk of a wildcat strike, mm-hmm. where you're talking of a general strike. That, of course, is illegal in this country,
right.
But there was some serious talk about it, and almost as quickly as that developed, there were a lot of forces that tried to channel, and did, I think, successfully in terms of their terms, that energy into electoral politics. It became less about a general strike in Wisconsin and more about the recalls, you know, defeating Scott Walker at the polls,
right.
Which all well and good. I'm definitely in favor of something like that. But is this movement susceptible to that same type of rechanneling of energy into just electoral politics, so that it's sucked back into the system and sort of made a little bit less dangerous and threatening in some ways?
I think it's explicitly a reaction against that. What excites me most is that, you know, I always worried that the young people who got involved in politics for the first time by campaigning for Obama were going to lapse into cynicism and apathy when they saw that the change that they voted for
yep.
wasn't happening, particularly on really core youth issues like jobs and climate change. And what's so exciting about this, this fall, is that you've seen the Obama generation say, okay, I get it now. that, you know, the power is not in Washington. Washington is a wholly owned subsidiary of Wall Street, so we need to go where the power is. And I think you see that same spirit in the protests against the Keystone XL pipeline. Like, we're going to go after this big mega project, which, you know, is disastrous for the environment, and we're going to test Obama and really see what he's made of. And the message of those protests is, you can't take us for granted. We might vote for you, but we're not going to work for you if you betray us on that. So I think people are just tired of what happens in this country again and again. Is every 2 years, you'll have some building of movements. Like, you'll have the anti-war movement in 2003, really strong, right? You know, million people on the streets. And then I just remember that moment in 2004 during the Democratic Convention in New York City, and suddenly the anti-war movement is a wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, all of that energy gets funneled into the Democratic Party machine. And the anti-war movement never recovers. Never recovered. I don't think people are going to make those mistakes again.
No, and that's why this is different. I've been speaking with the organizers, and I asked them about if this was a possibility that the Democratic Party would somehow co-opt this and change its message and make it very wonky. And they said time and time again, the actual structure of this, what they're doing here by sleeping here, makes it near to impossible to do that. because they can say this is Occupy Wall Street's new agenda, but it won't be true.
Right.
And everyone will know that.
Right. We were talking to someone yesterday when and they said that Dylan Radigan came down yesterday to, like, show support. And he kind of was, like, sort of expected to be, like, bumped to the front of the line when it comes to, like, speaking and stuff like that. And they were like, no, man, like, we're all doing this. And he was like, all right, right on. I get it. I get it.
Well, I got to tell you, he is incredibly... he's like manically excited.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They said that he's going to be sleeping here soon.
Yeah, yeah. I would not be surprised. The way he was telling me he was going to bring down his suits, his Armani's. I'm not sure that people are necessarily.
This is a moment that radicalizes people. You know, Dylan Radigan was not always this radical. You know, before the financial crisis, he absolutely wasn't. And this is the big difference between what we experienced, you know, in the Seattle moment in 1999. We were talking about the failures of capitalism in the middle of an economic boom. And there were all kinds of problems with capitalism, but people did not want to hear about it. And they treated like you were insane.
And that boom ended up being actually a bubble that was built on a house of cards that has since tumbled. Let me ask you, in terms of the broader sense, in terms of social movements, do you think the there was a piece by Aaron Ross Sorkin the New York Times financial writer who came down to Zuccotti Park to Liberty Plaza because a bank CEO had asked him to check it out for him? And, I mean, this is his own admission, which it's stunning that the guy has the balls to write this.
Well, my favorite part was the CEO was, like, genuinely afraid, where he was like, would you please check it out?
Yeah,
we're not in danger.
What was interesting, his fear was for his own personal safety, as opposed to, this is not going to get me in jail, is it? I mean, like, this is not going to spur any type of accountability. I'm just afraid these people are going to come to my house.
But that raises one point about...
Isn't that part of the leverage? I mean... Isn't the fact that people are willing to come here, take themselves out of their daily lives, put their bodily security at risk, sleep outside, show this level of commitment, as far as I'm concerned, it's the functional equivalent of those Tea Partiers showing up with guns at the rallies, in the sense that we are here, you have no leverage over us. You cannot take away our jobs. Many of us have lost our jobs. You cannot take away our homes. We're suffering from underwater mortgages and mortgage fraud. You cannot decrease our wages. That's already happened.
Right.
You cannot take away our health care. There is a lack of leverage. As long as people are here, there is a lack of leverage that I think scares the establishment in a way that we have not seen in years.
Right. I love that the Tea Party has guns and we have free apples and Jeff Magnum from Neutral Milk Hotel. Well, what I was going to say, what does that say about the media that you have this this rich executive on Wall Street that's nervous to go outside, and instead of sending security or one of his friends, he's like, I'll send the New York Times to scout it out for me and make sure I'm safe. Like, that's pathetic.
But it is, you know, there's been so much talk about what the protesters have done wrong. And, you know, they've done a lot right. And one of the things right they've done is be committedly nonviolent.
Right.
And refuse the media their spectacle of broken windows, or any kind of scuffles. And again and again, it's the cops who look terrible. And again and again, it works in the favor of the protesters. And the fact that, of course, you know, they have revealed themselves to be, you know, mercenaries for J.P. Morgan isn't helping, because it totally proves the case of people here, which is that, you know, their government, their state has been taken over by corporations. And, you know, J.P. Morgan, as we know, donated $4 million to the police.
Well-timed gift.
Very well-timed.
I'm talking about the level of commitment that people are showing here that
it's not a day
400,000 people who were marching uptown against the war, but it was one day, and the next day
saying, we will be gone tomorrow. I mean, that's been our strategy up to now. And that, you know, and in the anti-globalization movement, the strategy was, we're going to go after a summit, which is transient by nature, right? Mm-hmm. And that made us, you know, that was a recipe for being ephemeral, you know, for not putting down roots. So I think the fact that this is place-based, that there is no end date, is genius.
Yeah.
It's definitely part of the strength. But that said, it makes me nervous to hear you say that, Sam, because, you know, they do have the power to do more, which is a massive security crackdown.
Right.
They can put people in jail and keep them here. I think people have shown tremendous courage in the face of mass arrests. You know, what's amazing, with 700 people are arrested, you know, and more than 10,000
show up.
That's amazing.
Right.
That's something serious.
And Sam, you were talking about the commitment level of these kids. I was talking to a nurse yesterday, and he said that, you know, I'm job hunting right now. I can't sleep here, but these kids are holding down the fort for me.
Yeah.
So I'll join them when I can. So this is just a small slice of the representation of people who are actually agreeing with what they're doing here.
Right. I mean, that kid was coming down on lunch breaks, waking up early, leaving his kids, going before work, then going right after work. And then, yeah, trying to find a job in between. That's mind-blowing. I mean, yesterday after the guy went apeshit with all of his the cop with his baton,
yeah,
and there were more arrests, right as we were going to sleep, we heard rumors that they were going to take the park.
Yeah.
And there was definitely that cynical part of me where I'm like, that sounds right. Like, this democracy thing's been fun, but of course they're going to take the park.
Right.
And they didn't.
Yeah.
And not only did they not, but these kids could have left. They could have abandoned, you know. One of the things even that I learned when I first came down here, when people said they had tents and they're sleeping here, I pictured tents. But they're not even allowed to prop up their
right.
tents. So they're literally sitting on, yeah, bedding with blankets and donated sleeping bags. And, I mean, that is... it's one of the bravest things we've seen in a long, long time.
If I could just add one more little pitch, you know, we were sort of teasing Dylan Radigan here about, you know, coming down and thinking he was going to jump the line. But the truth is, so any celebrities listening, you know, come. Because that I think
yeah.
that's been really cool and a huge reason why it's been hard to just beat the crap out of people here and sweep them out.
Absolutely.
And if you happen to be famous and you are listening to this, use your bullshit celebrity for something useful.
Yeah,
right.
You know, because it's
right.
absolutely absurd.
No.
And
the
one
day
of
that
the
Michael
only
Moore
useful
came down here,
things you can do with this ridiculous status that you have in this ridiculous culture is come down here and provide security. Because when you come down and you just show your face, it makes it that much harder for the police to come and sweep
you away. Yeah, not
just
security.
It's the easiest thing to do.
But publicity, too. You know,
right.
this has turned into, like, the Studio 54 of 2011, you know,
right.
where every day I check my Twitter, it's like, Mark Ruffalo's just hanging out. That's awesome.
Well, you know, to paraphrase NPR, the reason why they wouldn't cover this in the first couple of days was, according to their news editor, was there was no one important here.
Right.
There was no violence.
And or property damage, and there
no
was
prominent
no
people.
And you know, prominent people is what they said, and there was no specific demands, and so
I know, love that quote, so, Sam, because it is so you know, it's so symbolic of the cultural divide that's opening up between people here. You know, this idea there were no prominent people, there were no people that really mattered
right,
here, right?
Right.
And this sort there of horizontal
are icky poor people.
Political space that's created here is like actually. Everyone matters and everybody's equal in this space, and that's a very alarming.
That's
idea.
It, but that makes it sound like they want like Helen Hunt down here breaking windows. Like that's awful.
Right. That's right. We just
Helen Hunt, if you are listening,
just give them an opportunity to do like a Terry Gross interview while she's down here in the background.
Right.
Wait, I want to get to because I know Naomi. I know you've got to go, but what constitutes success? I mean. This show of commitment, had they already succeeded? In other words, is this, if it was to end tomorrow and it was to roll up tomorrow for whatever reason, because the cops have come in here, is this just the beginning because the level of commitment here has inspired a certain success that will inevitably build upon itself?
Look, I think if this gets swept away, it's going to reappear in another incarnation. People are too committed for that. If this physical space, you know, becomes cordoned off, people will find other spaces. But look, success means changing this economic model at its core. The stakes are enormous, not just economically, also ecologically. We have so little time to actually turn this around. Climate change is a ticking clock. And so, no, honestly, I don't think we have the luxury to just be like, this was awesome, you know, it was a success in itself. No, we want to win.
Naomi Klein, that's a great way to thank you. And thank you for coming down here.
Thanks, Aaron.
From Canada.
Thank you, guys.
And thanks
awesome
for joining joining us on the show. All right, here, we'll get this.
Also, did you see the reaction when people cursed? When you cursed? They loved it. When you said pissed off? Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Naomi.
See you next.
All right, so
I forgot we were staying live, and I was always, I was almost like, bye, Sam.
See you guys.
Real quick, Sam, I just wanted to touch on that. Another barometer of success, I think, is if they inspire other franchises, if you will, to open up. And that's already happened. We know in L.A. and Chicago, Texas, Boston.
There were apparently arrests in Seattle last night.
Yes, in Seattle. Yep. So in that sense, they are inspiring it. But Naomi's right. If it doesn't ultimately result in profound change with this economic system that has failed the majority of Americans, then... You know, it will have been for naught.
Quick digression. I was so nervous around Naomi. Oh, I feel like I can talk.
Okay?
I can talk now. I was like trying to be smart.
You gotta just put your microphone back.
All right. Am I screaming?
Very loud.
When I get nervous,
your microphone has been down the entire time. All right. So you guys were here last night.
Yes.
I had one of the most bizarre experiences of being
your text messages were so funny.
At the going for, you know, from Tuesday night to yesterday. At the Washington, D.C. Take Back America's contract with a dream of something else that happens. And the energy that had basically... We were down in D.C. and the center of gravity was up here. And it was fascinating to watch how quickly people were... had pivoted because there were... You know, today, which is actually a distinct... group October 2011 starting their first action today, I think, out of D.C.
in Washington. Yep.
But at the same time, there's this movement that Van Jones has been attempting to construct, and you know, by certain metrics, has done well. I mean, I think it's fascinating to watch as the institutional left, whose job it is, to be fair. They're in Washington. Their job is to have access, and that limits their capacity to be very as oppositional as we might like and as they, I think, many times need to be. But they are sort of embracing what's happening here because in some ways it strengthens their hand. And I think there's obviously, I don't want to be too cynical about it, they share a lot of the agendas that are at least talked about in this part. But with that said, what happened yesterday?
Well, yesterday was the big sort of union gathering where you had workers from the TWU, the SEIU, the nurses union, the teachers union came out in support. There was a big march up to Foley Square. And then afterwards is when things got interesting with the police, who really in a violent manner cracked down on the protesters. There's footage online of a white shirt police officer swinging his baton at protesters like it's a samurai sword. And they ended up arresting almost 30 people, I think, which brings the total arrests to around or well over, I think now 800 people have been arrested.
I mean, yesterday, not to harp on this point about my parents, but yesterday was the day I think cynics and parents everywhere and took the movement seriously. Because, look, it's easy to...
Your parents are the co-chairs of the parents.
Of the...
There have been meetings.
Parents think our kids are gone crazy. They're association.
They're just being kids. They're just being kids. They'll start taking their classes again soon. And it's easy to write them off. And I think one of the reasons people write these kids off is because it's scary. Not what they're doing. What they're doing isn't scary, but what they're against is sort of scary. And I'll use Ralph Nader as an example. I like to use this example. The fury in people's eyes when you bring up Ralph Nader is uncanny, right? But if you look at what Ralph Nader stood for, and if you look at what Obama or Kerry or Gore stood for, chances are, if you're listening to this show, whether you agreed with whether he should run or not, chances are your views line up more so with Nader, right? Right. So you look at the election, you know, Ralph Nader walks by, thanks for George Bush, you fucking, and they people freak out. Okay, so was it Ralph Nader's fault purely that George Bush won? No, for many reasons we've been discussing for years, right? But it's easy to go after him. And the reason it's easy to go after him is because you have two options. The first option is, do I go after a broken electoral system? And do I fix that? Well, that's really big. Or do I blame the old guy with the wonky eye who's kind of goofy? Well, that's really easy. It's the same thing Republicans do, where, you know, do I go after Wall Street like these are? Well, that's really hard. Or do I blame a Mexican? Or do I blame a gay person?
Well, I think the dynamic for Republicans is more like their interests are more aligned with what's going on in Wall Street.
Right.
And they have an electoral advantage.
Politicians should be, yes, because politicians are taking their money and giving them money. But the Tea Party shouldn't be. Any Republican who, again, doesn't make $1 billion, doesn't make millions of dollars, should be out here sleeping with these kids. But they've been sort of brainwashed. And like I said, it's really hard to take on these guys. It's much easier to be like, the Mexican guy took my job.
Yeah, and we've also discussed that, you know, we have very high unemployment right now, and people can't find jobs, or people are job hunting, and people have children, or people have a tenuous grip on their job, and they're scared that if they have a police record, they'll lose it.
Right.
So there's a whole host of reasons why people aren't here. But I think, Jamie, you're right, that another reason is that the problem seems so big that they don't see how it's sort of like the underwear gnomes. They're like, okay, Zuccotti Park plus X equals changed economic system.
Right.
And they don't really get what the second step is. But they're asking the wrong question. The kids, what they're doing here right now, aren't operating like the traditional Democratic Party. They're not going to have wonky policies at the end of this, you know, unless they've been, you know, co-opted by the Democratic Party. What they're doing is physical resistance, like old school civil disobedience.
And what I think, you know, maybe not more important than any policy, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but the most moving thing to me yesterday, because I actually got in the march and marched with them, was, like Naomi was saying, not only the tourists, but you'd have people marching, and then suddenly you'd see an older woman chanting with, just watching. You'd see an immigrant standing outside of his store, sort of nodding in solidarity. And, you know, maybe we don't come out of this with a lot of policy, but Jesus Christ, we're getting attention. And,
right.
and that's a really big deal, because you're making people ask questions. The chance that these kids were chanting yesterday, not kids, I say kids, but from all walks of life, were chanting yesterday were so universal and so easy to understand. You know, we talk about how Barack Obama's a good orator. All we need are these marchers to get up and chant, "We are the 99%, so are you."
Right.
Or chant, you know, "End the wars, tax the rich." These are very easy things to digest, and the people who were actually hearing them understood.
Yeah, the thing that really strikes me, and I got to say, you know, because we just sort of jumped into the intro of the show, but Matt and I were down here, was it just like a week and a half, last Tuesday. So it was about 9-10 days ago. And I can tell you that there are probably 20 to 30 times more people. There was about 200 people there. And there was only one segment. I mean, we can't find a place to actually be in the circular part of the park. We broadcast last time from the media center.
Wow.
Benches right on the media center.
Right.
And it was just like, can we plug in here? Sure.
Yeah.
And the growth has been just exponential. I mean, it is stunning how many people are here now.
It is...
noon, not even noon, I
right
guess,
up.
On a weekday.
I've been covering this since the beginning, and I have to be completely honest.
Yes, I know. I saw Jamie's tweets.
Yes.
Sam,
I'm
a supportive husband.
Yeah. and the first
day... Oh, yeah,
day,
that. Sorry.
Yeah.
My bad.
The first day of the protest, I was not impressed. You know, Adbusters originally said that they were hoping for 20,000 people to come out, that it was going to be the next, you know, Tahrir Square. And a few hundred people came out, and we were really disappointed. And we were like, well, I guess this is it. And then the occupation began, and every day since then, it's been growing and growing and getting more and better coverage in the media.
Right.
I think people are finally starting to understand what qualifies as good coverage of this issue.
I mean, not only is it big, and I said this on our show last night, but I'll say it to anyone who will listen. Not only is it big, yesterday was the first time I got to come out because I've been traveling while Allison's been covering it. And I was so shocked with how organized it is. I mean, it is the opposite of what the media is saying, where we brought sleeping bags to donate. And I go to Allison, I go, where do you think we should bring the sleeping bags? And she's like, oh, we'll just ask at the front desk. And I was like, what? you do that at the Y. Like, we need to ask at the front desk. And so we asked at the front desk, and we were brought over to the place where you drop off the sleeping bags, and we passed the media center.
That is all over the past week that has developed. There was no stations. It was more or less amorphous.
Not only that, they have press people now who circulate during the events, and I was snagged the other day by one of them, and he said, "Do you have any questions?" And he's just sort of a guide for the media, which is brilliant when you think about it, because they're so misrepresented in the media right now.
I mean, there's a food table that is better than most hotels I've stayed at for all the people. No one's going to go hungry. There is, in the middle of a park, a media center with tables and computers plugged in. Security. Someone tried to come in and take pictures yesterday of someone's computer, and the security guy very nicely was like, "All right, you know," escorted him out. There are people walking around with red crosses that are medics. There are seminars. There was a seminar being given by a lawyer this morning.
Right.
Just a bunch of people sitting Indian style watching this guy speak about civil disobedience, about police brutality. I mean, it is mind-blowing what is happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's a structure that's developing here that is not, it's not unlike, you know, what happened in Tahrir Square and the Los Ignacados, where they're creating a small town inside of the park.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And I had heard reports last night.
There are drums.
That the cops had come in and taken some equipment. Was that the case? Did you hear that?
Well, there was reports last night that there were helicopters flying above the park, that the protesters were afraid they were going to raid the park. I don't know if they ended up seizing equipment ultimately, but we were afraid for a second that they were just going to do a total sweep and arrest everybody.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. I think that didn't happen because this is getting a lot of attention right now, and
right.
The NYPD, while they are barbaric, they're not complete and total morons yet, you know?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
they
that
understand
would not have gone well.
That would have been disastrous PR for the entire department.
It's pretty stunning to me because I really have the sense that they still, as of yet, don't really have a strategy,
no.
A long-term strategy on how to deal with this. You know, Matt and I were coming in, and in Boston, apparently, the city has been extremely accommodating. The police have been extremely accommodating to the protesters. Matt was saying he heard reports that the police were actually shuttling people to the protest site in certain circumstances.
Unless that was a trick. How do I get to the protest in the back of my van?
It's right here. Yes, head out here. Okay, now what you do, you cross the Charles.
Yeah. You know, it's always a mixed bag, because sometimes you have the police officers who make it their sole duty to make sure they're not putting up physical structures here. Police officers pepper spraying protesters. But then there are police officers I've witnessed who are incredibly, as you said, cordial to the protesters.
And I don't want to take credit away for them, because that's amazing. And you hear so many bad stories about the NYPD that I went to a concert with my brothers the other day, and we asked the cop for directions, and he was really nice, and I'm like, that was amazing. But the cops you're describing, the ones who are helping people, they're doing their job. That's what people forget. When you look at protests like this, cops are always so automatically assumed to be adversarial because you see people wielding batons like they're in a Bruce Lee movie. But the bottom line is that's their job. Their job is to, yes, protect the bankers. And their job is to, yes, protect the kids sleeping in the park. You know, taxpayers are the ones that have been paying their salary long before the banks decided to start giving donations. Their job is to help us.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm suggesting is that I would imagine that on some level of the city government, somebody's sitting down going, what is our short-term,
our
tactical and our tactics and our strategy? And I think when you see, you know, I imagine what happened last night is that the cops are like, don't let them go on Wall Street because they're going to take a poop on the bowl, and we can't have poop on the bowl or whatever it is.
Yeah. That's why it's also really important.
One cop
that
decides that the way I execute that order is by taking out my nightstick and swinging around like, you know, I'm Darth Vader or something.
Yeah. I mean, that is also, it's really important, as Naomi said, for this to remain peaceful. Because if you think they're not waiting on the parameters looking for any reason to just do a mass sweep,
right,
you fooled yourself. The second this gets violent, that's their excuse to shut it down completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, when I said they were chanting, "We are the 99%, and then a group of people would say, "And so are you," the "and so are you" was directed to the people around the perimeter. And some of the people around the perimeter, many, were police officers. So you hear these stories about, you know, kids who are being arrested screaming at these cops like, "We're doing this for you. We're protecting you. You know, maybe the reason that these cops are acting like these sociopaths by swinging their baton is because they have crappy living standards. Well, guess what? We're fighting for that. We're fighting so you don't lose your pension, so your benefits don't get cut. I mean, every police officer should be thanking these kids, not beating the shit out of them.
And I think some do understand that, and I've seen them sort of, you know, give the nod of solidarity where the more articulate protesters who tell them, we're fighting so your pensions don't get cut.
Right.
You do see that gleam of recognition, and I think that's why you find some police officers who are escorting protesters
right.
to, you know, protest, which is amazing. And actually, they're not required to do that.
Well, you know, knowing a couple cops, you know, I think there's all different types, and I think they also get, you know, they get briefed on these type of things. I know the cops, before the RNC protests in 2004, I know the cops were being told, there's going to be violence.
Yeah.
They're going to come in here. It's going to be a bunch of anarchists. They're going to have Molotov cocktails. I mean, we spoke to, I think it was Ed Conlin at the time, Janine and I, who is an author of a great book, who's the name of which escapes me at the moment. But he came in, and he was like, we're hearing some really scary stuff, and I'm not convinced that they're not told certain scary stuff. You know, obviously a lot of cops also, like
you
anybody
know,
else, listen, if everybody who had the same sort of demographic background as your average cop does
yeah.
was forced to be here,
right?
There would be a lot more conflict.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, the people who don't want to deal with what's going on here, they don't have to show up every day.
Yeah.
The cops do.
Right.
And so there's a certain amount of there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
And the more that happens, I think, the real question is, if there will be a point where there is another situation like on the bridge that happened the other day, where there is a critical mass of cops who just go like, this is a bad idea.
Well,
yeah, I wanted to say, as far as, you know, blue-collar workers go, there is a sort of fashionable, you know, trend to hippie punch, you know, where if peaceful resistance is happening, that cops, and we were actually speaking
well,
to...
This is a 40-year trend. I mean,
yeah.
If anything, at this point, it's diminishing.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Well, we talked to a union
right, this is really interesting.
Worker the other day, one of the electrical workers, who was saying that he told his boss he was planning to come down here, and his boss said, oh, you're going to go join the hippies? And they were trying to explain to us, these were two young guys, that there was a 40-year trend in unions to hippie punch. And now that's sort of phasing out because there's younger and younger workers who understand that it's not the caricature of a hippie anymore. When we were talking to these guys, they were saying, this is a American movement. These are patriots here. They want to fix the economic system to save America.
Right.
Well, I think that's also the big point, too, is that we were saying with Naomi that this is about, at the end of the day, about an economic protest.
Mm-hmm.
It takes many different forms, but at its heart, it is about economic justice.
Right. They chose Wall Street for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the hippie, the hippies that first sort of appeared on the scene and were there when this cleave between the unions happened,
mm-hmm.
were primarily looking for social emancipation, or in that case, against the war, which was tied into that whole notion of a liberal social agenda. Those battles, while not completely finished, are at least largely been fought. And so I think there's a lot of different things that conspire to change the attitude. Now, you know, like, they're over there, you got some construction workers just hanging out.
Right next to a drum circle, I would like
right.
to add. I mean, it's a great scene where you see a bunch of people playing drums. You know, you do see a hippie dancing, but right next to it, you see a bunch of people in their neon green street vests.
Now, if I was a lazy journalist working for the New York Times, I would show up here and I would find the craziest people and I would report strictly on that.
Right.
But if I was to give a true depiction of what's happening here right now, I would interview the union workers. I would interview the youth who are here because they can't find jobs and are buried under $100,000 worth of student loan debt. And then, yes, you acknowledge that there's a hippie as
and
well.
And then, of course, you'd make sure that the CEOs are safe, just like Aaron Sorkin did.
I would fasten my gold cufflinks.
Yep. And then you would have your chopper get you out of here as soon as possible before you smell like patchouli.
That's the dream. One day I'll be able to do that.
I think so.
I just found that piece so stunning that he would actually admit it. I mean, you know, it's like...
Well, that's what a disconnect there is.
You find out later, like, you know, the only reason we went down there was because we got a call from a bank executive. This guy's... He's telling the story.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what one of my favorite parts about that was when he tried to discredit the entire movement because some protesters have used ATMs.
Right, well...
Like, you're not allowed to critique the broken economic system because some people belong with Bank of America.
If they didn't use ATMs, then he would have called them all hobos.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. He was just looking for any reason to
discredit.
They don't
even want to use ATMs because they don't like capitalism.
Right.
The encouraging part, and I said this on the show the other day, the encouraging part for me, though, was the idea that there is a contemplation of by these people of some type of there is some sense of insecurity that they're feeling. Now, it is an emotionally undeveloped sense of insecurity in the sense of, like, these people are going to come bust into my house and they're going to take my scalp, as opposed to, like, hopefully over time it will develop into, is this going to be a strong enough movement that the Department of Justice may actually start to open up one of these investigations?
Yeah.
Or, and, you know, Sorkin also had this sort of, like, cryptic, well, they're not violent.
Yes, I know.
And I think that is the key. I really do think that the level of discipline and the level of sacrifice that people are exhibiting here shows a commitment that I think ultimately will be scary to the establishment. Because once you get past that, I am worried about getting a, you know, an arrest record because I'm graduating college or I'm getting out of high school and I can't find a job. Or I'm 47 or I'm 55 and I've lost my job and I don't know how I'm going to make it between now and Social Security and I got to keep trying to get a job or I have no health insurance. Once you get past that point where that economic insecurity keeps you from doing this and you've gone past that point where, like, I don't have any other hope. I got nothing left to lose.
That's what it is right now.
That's when I think.
And that was the first day when I was interviewing protesters. I talked to this 40-year-old father of two, and I asked him why he was joining this movement. And he said, because, as you said, Sam, I have no hope. There's no hope for my children. The bank took my house. I don't have a job. This is all I have left. And we've reached that point. That's why I say this is the point of no return.
I mean, why?
You know, if they shut this down tomorrow, they'll pick a new spot and they'll meet up.
I mean, how bad can the politicians, and I do not know the answer, this is not rhetorical, how bad can they let it get when people have it so bad that they're sleeping in parks? You know what I mean? What level does it have to get to before they're like, all right, maybe we should tax billionaires a little more just so they don't have to sleep in the streets
anymore.
But
that's the point. They're never going to do that. You know, they're never going to reach that decision together. And the political parties are never going to make them do that because they take donations from the giant corporations and the giant
banks. That has been crazy. Following Barack Obama on Twitter and seeing reports of people getting arrested here for protesting not having health care or better access to schools, and then seeing Obama like, did you get the donation mailer today? And it's like, Jesus Christ, man, take a break and come down here.
Well, I think the key is that if there is enough of that insecurity on part of the establishment, it becomes easier to make a trade with them. You know, I mean, that's basically how we got the New Deal. You can either do Social Security or you can wait until this country becomes communist. And it's not going to work out very well for you. I want to bring in our Majority Report special correspondent.
The old rebel
rouser.
Been
down here for days. Don't be a putz. Here, do you guys mind?
No, me and him have a relationship. We can share mics. You can have your own.
Okay.
Here, I'll come around.
Oh, now it's complicated.
No, this is my fault. Here, you can come here.
We're shuffling.
So don't be a putz. Jeff, of course, was the one who shot the first salvo in the Citizen Radio Majority Report Twitter wars.
Can I say your producer had the funniest line yesterday where he wrote to us, he tweeted us and goes, hey, I know there's a feud, but I'm really excited to work with you guys tomorrow. And I wrote back with, like, frantic exclamation points. I was like, there is no feud. And then he wrote back, so then the feud will start tomorrow.
Well, you mentioned when you came to the welcome desk, it was actually, you know, I was sitting there and saw you guys, and I was actually the person that took them back and showed them where to go with the backpacks.
Very valuable.
Well, you know, it's not really about that.
So, Jeff, you have been here since the 17th, right? I mean, you've been here on the 17th.
Yep, every day.
And just give me, you know, give me your sense of how things have evolved and what the latest is.
I mean, certainly every time we have one of these big sort of watershed events and a big crowd comes out, the next day it kind of returns back to somewhat normal, but we always have bigger...
This is like 10, 20 times more than it was when it was...
No, I mean, like I said, it's not growing linear, it's exponential. And what's really starting to happen, I heard your interview with Bill Scheer, and it was so classic that he seemed also, you know, in that sort of establishment type of way that progressives meet and do their deal. The fact that, one, he even mentioned deficit reduction. If there's one message that you will not find in a million signs out here, is any talk of deficit reduction.
Correct.
It's not important. And the image of you guys packing up stuff and leaving a hotel is so far removed from what's going out here.
I was sitting in the like the basement of a conference room, literally the only people there. Everybody had sort of left. It had this sort of real feeling of like the energy is just... is not here. And I think there's the clear sort of understanding of that in Washington, and there's a real attempt to sort of to capture some of it.
Well, that's really exciting. If we can get to a point, I remember the first year I went to Netroots Nation, I was really excited because, you know, it was the first year we met a lot of our heroes, and that I felt like I was part of the progressive community. But I was also kind of like, all right, so we're cheering things we already know. Then a bunch of, you know, anti-corporation liberals are going and eating their factory farm food and drinking their corporate beer and smoking their corporate cigarettes. And, you know, the energy was all right. There was a lot of infighting, which is what I just did. And now you have a movement like this where so many people, again, have put so much on the line.
Well, this
I hope we get to a point.
Diverse movement. Too.
Yeah, it's much more diverse. It's not a bunch of white bloggers. But I really hope that... I hope that all conferences in D.C. are boring now. I hope what it takes for people to get motivated...
I think this one was probably already a little bit boring before. Yeah,
sure. But I hope for people to get motivated, I hope it has to be this level now. I hope this has set the bar for what you have to do now as an organizer and as a Democrat, as a liberal.
Well, I think what makes this so radically different is the, as we've been talking about, the physical occupation. And liberals weren't too fond of doing that. We like to show up for protests, we would be there all day, and then we would leave. And nothing gets done when you do that. You have to disrupt
virtual protests.
Right. You have to disrupt the flow, the ordinary flow, you know? And Chris Hedges has been calling for people to do this for months and months and months. And this was the first time this is a serious effort to do that. And that's why it's special.
I mean, it also seems almost novel that instead of trying to craft a message and then have people, you know, kind of line up behind that, it almost reminds me of the way that when they create a new perfume, they come up with the name and the branding for it before they even create the smell.
Right.
And so it's almost a novel idea that, hey, we're here first just with an idea of what we want, and then we come up with the message, as opposed to the other way around. It's like Obama had a marketing campaign, and you just kind of put Obama in it, and that's kind of what he became.
Jeff, let me get your sense. I mean, you've been here every day. When we were here last, spoke to a couple of people who specifically were talking about what was going on here. In contrast to Obama, saying you know, this is real change. And to what extent do you think that some type of disillusionment, people who have been brought into the process by the Obama campaign, and then have been sort of frustrated at the lack of real dynamic change, are here now?
Oh, I think that was basically the core group of who started this in a lot of ways. I mean, with the age being kind of 22, 23, either just out of college or maybe still in college, I think probably the Obama campaign was the first one that they paid attention to. And he said a lot of the right things. I mean, you go back and you listen to the candidate Obama speeches, they kind of fit in here. And so the fact that none of that happened, I think it instantly just sort of encapsulated the sort of feeling
that
we're powerless
because
with that system.
I mean, I've had a real concern. I've heard others express that one of the real sort of tragedies of, putting aside the debate as to whether or not there's things that he's done that is good and things that he's done are bad, I don't think that he could argue that he was, that his presidency has been transformative, which was certainly part of what we were sold. And the fear was that he's brought in all these young people into the process who were otherwise disengaged, and that they would be completely turned off. Fuck it, I'm going back to, you know, I don't know what 22-year-olds do if they're not engaged.
I can feel that for the youngins on Citizen Radio. Oh, we pretty much just get high and listen to Phish.
Oh, all right. Well, so that's different from people my age who just get high and listen to Built to Spill. So
I don't know what that means.
But like, I'm just going to get high. I'm going to go listen to but it seems to have – they have not lost their – they haven't gotten so cynical that they've given up. It's really just we just got to find a different way of doing
it. They do have hope, but a large part of it, too, is that they have nothing to go back to. There's no job. There's no, college because they're buried under student debt. There's no normal anymore.
I heard like 75% of graduates, I think this from college, are living with their folks now.
Yes, exactly. So it's
any reason to get out of the house.
When you have no, prospects on the horizon, this seems like kind of a good idea. It's like, well, maybe something good will come of this.
Well, and not only that, these kids did the right thing. You know, I mean, I got shit on when I was Sam Cedar is being he's so famous right now. People said there was someone asking him where he has been on TV. He is from Sex and the City.
Maybe on.
He played Marissa.
After we're done with this, I'm going to be asked the same thing.
That's true. Was there even a Marissa on Sex and the City?
Yes,
wasn't a Marissa.
There was a Miranda.
Miranda.
Right,
I'm not
him.
Anyway,
I was the guy who read the Miranda rights.
I got a lot of shit because I dropped out of high school in order to do stand up and all this stuff. And
give me the microphone.
Oh, the mic.
Give me the microphone.
Sam just took
Jamie's
mic.
The liberal elite just took my mic. And so for me, I'm kind of like, all right, I belong here. I get it. But a lot of
you
these
dropped
kids.
Dropped out of high school to do stand up?
I did.
You couldn't handle both at the same time?
Hey, listen. Listen, Grandpa.
Wait. It wasn't a business decision. Jamie, failed out of high school.
Oh, yeah. I was. Here's what's so funny. So I've gone this
whole. Oh, you got kicked out of high school.
I went this whole show, and I'm like, I'm going to be respectful. The feud was blown out of proportion. I'm not going to make any old people jokes. And then Sam, much like my father, is like, well, why didn't you go to college?
I didn't say college.
That's true. So anyway, a lot of these kids, the unemployed kids you were just talking about, the really shitty thing and why they're probably so scared is because they did the right thing.
Right.
I mean, you're not supposed to drop out of high school. You're not supposed to not go to college. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to go to college, get an education,
right.
And then get a job. These kids did the right thing.
And it's not just the kids. The older people played by the rules.
Yeah. And
they got a mortgage.
And they
were told that mortgage was fine.
Right. How scary is that? And now they're buried in student loan or they're buried with these mortgages.
Or they lost their
home. I mean, that is... has got to be so scary. And what you were talking about with Obama is, I was scared of the same thing Naomi was really scared about, which is, what was Obama's, first decision? Is what he had Rick Warren speak at his inauguration, right? Rick Warren, one of the founders of, or the funders of Proposition 8. How many gay kids campaigned for Obama, maybe for the first time, to then have this bigot give the inauguration prayer? And I'm like, I really thought everyone was going to turn and no one was going to care anymore. And they didn't. They totally proved all of us cynics wrong, where they just got angry. And sure, there are some people who... Oh, was I... about the high school thing? What? I'm leaving. I'm going to give me my sleeping bag.
No, Sam's advertising
his show. I realize people are looking around like, what is this?
What is
I don't have a Citizen Radio card because I'm not prepared.
Here's my sign. It's a card.
I'm going to look at my wallet.
I think it's interesting. I think for a long time there was a series of incidents like that.
Yeah.
Okay, he's got to have Rick Warren because he's building a cachet.
Right.
He's building some political capital.
That was the funniest.
He is going to spend it. And
we're not going to get a public option because we're going to close Guantanamo. He's going to do that. Well, no, he didn't close Guantanamo because we're going to tax the rich. All right, he's not going to tax the rich, but we're going to... Yeah, and he just kept going and going and going. See, I know things. You assholes.
Yay!
You know, I think there's another thing when you talk about the difference between the hope that Obama basically had versus what people are feeling about this in hope, is that in the same way that Obama seems risk-averse and he's almost scared to really step out and take a real political risk, that's what this is all about.
Right.
And so what we saw yesterday, the difference even between the huge march at 3, 4, 5 o'clock where all the unions were out here, it was enormous. You know, it virtually stretched from this park to City Hall, and they
how
reached the park before
that?
We had
from,
even
from
left
here
the,
to City
the other
Hall,
side.
How many blocks is that?
I think it's like one subway stop.
Basically. You know, and actually after I was over there, the square across from City Hall was pretty much filled.
Foley Square.
The cops had blocked off all sides.
Yeah, there were several bottlenecks. So
and they weren't
those
letting
amazing
people go
photos
through.
You saw, that was not even the majority. Yeah, there were just...
Right.
So I ended up actually just jumping down the subway, driving back here, coming up here, and it was a huge crowd on this
side
still.
And then my understanding is 1,000 people or so essentially said, let's go to Wall Street. And that's where the conflict
exactly. And actually, I mean, it was probably more than that. People came back here and congregated for a while. Nightfall started to come. And there were so many people. It was so huge and so much energy. They just felt like, let's go do something else.
Is there anybody in the infrastructure who is, like, counting how many people are sleeping here at night? I mean, because when we were here last time, there was clearly much fewer people sleeping here at
yes,
night.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I would say there was probably 50 to 100, would you say? And
the first week was, you know, 100 probably tops, and then between 100 and 200, pretty much all the way up until maybe less than a week ago.
And now there's got to be, I mean, close to 1,000, right? I mean, I can't tell. I'm
I don't know if
tarps.
I would say that many, but maybe upwards of 500. I mean, I know because we have so much supplies now being donated. There are kids showing up here with nothing and just like,
well,
I need a sleeping bag.
And I know some kids don't want to take the supplies that others are taking, so they go home at night and then they come back
right in the morning. Well, I mean, there's right now, even just in the time that we've been here, the numbers have grown. And it's interesting. This has become a tourist destination. And I should also say to that douchebag I saw on Twitter who's like, they're hurting small businesses down here. This is the best thing that's ever happened.
Oh, those food stands? The food trucks are hopping.
The falafel stand over there? Come on.
Oh,
yeah.
The McDonald's, we're peeing in that a lot.
Panini and company breads have achieved maximum profitability.
Right.
What was I going to say? Oh, right. What I'm wondering, and this is legitimate, and I don't want to sound like one of those people that is, you know, well, what are the evil protesters going to do? So I want to preface it with that. But I'm legitimately wondering, you know, what happened last night was there were 2,000 people who felt like we weren't doing enough. And, you know, Jesse Meyerson was on Keith Olbermann Live, and he said that a lot of them went to Wall Street, not to vandalize, but to actually commit civil disobedience. And they went down there expecting that they would be arrested. Not expecting that a cop would go crazy and start hitting them with a baton, but they expected that they would get arrested, right? So what I am wondering is, we keep talking about one of the politicians going to do something. You know, what's going to be enough? What I'm wondering is, when are these kids going to get bored and say that this isn't enough? You know, and not in a violent way, not in a vandalizing way, but if nothing happens, if the mainstream media keeps shutting them out, if every once in a while unions do show up and then they leave, I wonder when they're like, you know what, it's time to move to Wall Street. I wonder when they're going to take it up a notch, and I don't know, and I don't know if that'll be, if that'll help, or I don't know if they'll get shut down by the cops.
If that's anything you can even predict, you know?
No, Jeff, but I mean, Jeff, you're shaking your head.
Well, no, I mean, if you saw Greg Mitchell blogged about it, that the first national poll came out about this, and there's a national 33% favorability for this, which is ahead of the Tea Party, the Republican Party, Congress, you know, virtually the president, and that's with no media, and what little media has mostly been misinformation. And so I think, honestly, this resonates so broadly that even in red state America, they hear protesting Wall Street. Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that was always, from the very beginning, that I always thought was just brilliant. Because, you know, it's not Occupy the Natural History Museum.
Right, you know.
It's not Occupy Central Park.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw on Wednesday afternoon early, that's when the real big corporate media came in, really for the first time, and you could just see them preparing their hit pieces. It was so obvious, you know. They had lavalier mics on the kids, so they wouldn't really know what was on mic and what
uh-huh.
wasn't. And the cameras were just rolling continuously. And, you know, at one point, the treasury person was changing the money out with the buckets, and they showed, like, her little banker's bag has, like, Scooby-Doo on it, and they tried to belittle it. You could see a tight shot there. So
yeah, Scooby-Doo. That's really,
you know. And I mean, Erin Burnett came here and did, you know, a vile piece. So
I think
know.
It's so funny that one of her bus ads is right across the street here at the park.
Yeah, talk about the Erin Burnett piece.
Well, Erin Burnett.
Allison has lost her mind on Twitter.
Twitter has just become the tool I use to torture CNN on now. I just, like, am adding the hosts all day, and I'm like, you guys are a joke. So Erin Burnett just got a show on CNN, and she did, I don't want to even call it coverage of what's happening.
Before
here.
You talk about the actual coverage, when I first learned she had a show, CNN, really with its pulse on the people, they're advertising this new show, and I don't know who Erin Burnett is, and they're advertising, and they're like, straight from Wall Street. And they even showed the Wall Street sign like it's a good thing. And I'm like, are you guys going outside? Do you know, like,
so
what's
Erin
happening?
Burnett, if you don't know who she is, she used to work for Goldman Sachs. She is married, or she's, excuse me, engaged to a Citigroup executive. So she is as in the pocket of Wall Street as she could possibly be.
Right.
So she did some coverage about what's happening here. And, you know, basically was very snotty about it and said that, you know, there are a bunch of hippies in a drum circle. But then she even went so far as to imply that they could get violent, basing this on absolute nothing. So Erin Burnett was really the first person that everybody started to go after in terms of having really poor, biased coverage of what's happening with Occupy Wall Street.
And, look, and we should say, with the drumming in the background, not in a circle.
No.
They're doing a presentational
maybe
style.
Maybe this is in response to Erin Burnett.
Actually, you know, it's basically more of like a percussion band than a drum circle.
When I heard that the drums were getting louder as you said that, I was just like, we can edit that out in post, right?
Right.
There's no post.
No, there is no. Well, there is a post when we post, but no, it's off.
Yeah.
We will not be able to.
This is happening.
So who is J.R.
Meyerson? J.A. Meyerson, he's a contributor for Alternet, and he's just this really great spokesperson. He's one of the media people. I don't even know his official title. I mean, we had him on Citizen Radio way back when.
He's sometimes a contributor to Alternet.
Yeah, well, he's such a good spokesperson that when they were looking for someone to go on, like, Chris Hayes' show with Allison, we were like, Jesse. Keith Olbermann's people called me yesterday, and we're like, do you know anyone there live? I'm like, Jesse.
But there's been a lot of good coverage. You know, Sarah Jaffe from Alternet's been fantastic.
Penny Red's here from London.
Is very good.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see just sort of, I mean, we're in New York. We should be getting, there should be a decent amount of coverage.
Sure. And actually, to describe the scene, even after what was going down on Wall Street when the cops were beating everyone up and the arrests had started, from there, actually, there was another decision made to mobilize back more people towards City Hall. And at one point in the plaza here, there was just, 50 cops sprinting at full speed right down Liberty here. And they started just cordoning off this entire square. And people started to wonder, as you said, whether they were going to take the square. So, you know, it was kind of a chaotic, crazy scene last night.
It was, yeah.
I think this is new, the steel barricades now around the square that are around. I think it's just a way to sort of control.
Been there for the march. I don't know.
That's been up for a while, yeah. I think for the marches, yeah.
And Jeff, are you hearing anything about what's next? I mean, because that is one of the problems, like you're saying, is that there is a... there's a voracious appetite for the new.
Right.
And at one point...
All right, look, there may or may not be people hula hooping right now.
There are some guys who are sort of performing.
Now look, let's point out that what's happening behind us, they're not all like that. It's always the people who need to go out in the front.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, our crappy media is going to show up and just show this on the news and say, this is what they're doing.
It's going to be this guy and then us next to him looking slightly annoyed.
Yeah.
That's right. You know.
But, again, you go inside the park, you make it back. I mean, isn't that the job of the news, not just to report? Do they really show up and just be, like, the first thing they see and be like, I saw that, all done?
Well, also, can I just say, like, why is there such vicious hatred for hippies by the media? Why? I mean, I know why, but isn't it bizarre that they reserve all of their hostility for hippies and not, say, Goldman Sachs?
Right.
Like, who's done more damage to the country?
Hippies don't pay their bills, homie.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's exceeded only by their hatred for unions.
So Jeff, anyways, I'm sorry. So,
colonial dressers.
Dude, you're not on mic.
Right.
We can't hear you.
No, he was just making a good point to me as a friend. As a friend.
You're not allowed to have opinions. I don't know if he told you.
Not off mic opinion.
All right. What's the difference between the hippies here and the people at Tea Party rallies who wear their colonial garb?
Well, the ones
These
that...
These people are not receiving billions of dollars from corporate sponsors.
Yeah.
And I approve of their style a little bit better. But what is next? What are you hearing? Like, I'm hearing that there may be more unions coming down next week. What else are you hearing?
Yeah, there's definitely union support, but I think what that brought is a lot of people feeling as if it's really the structure of the union itself and their leadership that we're looking for, and it's not. It's really more about union members.
Right.
You know, and they want to be a part of it. So there's definitely a narrative. I mean, the one thing that the corporate media hates as much, if not more, than hippies, it's unions.
Right.
So,
Tell me, in terms of, like, what are people talking about? What are people anticipating is going to happen over the next couple of days? Are there plans for this weekend? I mean, the weekends tend to be the sort of when it swells. Now, of course, I think very intelligently, there's when there are outside sort of other groups, institutions that are coming in on a Wednesday. So you have a large contingency of people on the weekend, and then midweek it swells again. It's not unlike the way that we program our podcast to sort of ride certain waves when we know people are going to show up. What are you hearing, and has it changed in terms of the dissemination of what is being planned for the near future?
No, I mean, part of what's happening certainly is just the entire organization's becoming more sophisticated. And as they get reach sort of having more capabilities, I think the ability to either, for example, have outreach programs that are more effective and far-reaching throughout the city, there's definitely parts uptown where people still don't know about this. And so I think we're becoming more effective there. Also, with all the satellite groups, I think what you're going to start to see is that their rise will mirror this in a way, and that ultimately I could see them becoming connected in a way where, you know, instead of having a general assembly within each town, then we start having an assembly of assemblies, so to speak.
Ah, interesting.
You know, and it almost becomes a parallel political structure to either where it becomes bigger than the Democratic or Republican parties, or maybe that's when a certain segment of the Democrats peel off and come over to us, and then we really have a majority
of
the country.
That's fascinating. I hadn't contemplated the idea that you would have a general assembly, which would involve, I guess, theoretically representatives from other occupies, and I guess it wouldn't be necessarily representatives in the sense that people would be specifically sent. It would just be, we're going to all meet. And so if you're from Boston, show up here if you want. If you're from New York, show up here if you want.
I wonder, though, do you think, and I honestly don't know, at a certain point that's going to meet resistance just because it's almost too structured?
It's possible, but I like to think of it, I mean, particularly with the, you know, the death of Steve Jobs, and people have talked, you know, one way or another about him. But one of the things, at least the last thing he did to me that was really notable, is that he took the system of where people started putting music on MP3s and created a system where basically they, you know, he took advantage of file sharing and such. And that was a technology that came and basically supplanted the record industry in a way they didn't even see coming. You know, if they had been able to forecast it ahead, they probably could have killed it.
Right.
But it literally came so fast that it just wiped them out. And it almost feels like what's going on here might grow so fast.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering, because obviously there's been a resistance here to hierarchy.
This
and that
true.
Sounds like a system of hierarchy in a certain sense.
Sort of, but I think that still we're talking about only issues that there's true consensus on with everybody.
Right.
So, you know, anytime you meet resistance, that's one of the drawbacks, frankly, of what they've had in the General Assembly, is that certain things, if just kind of a few people are like, I don't know about that, it holds up the process.
Right.
So, you know, as with all the things, I think a lot of the strengths and weaknesses are the same thing. But there's so many fundamental things about Wall Street and inequality in this country, healthcare, education, that I don't think it takes a leader to be the one to spread that message.
I have a question. I have a question for you. So I just got a tweet from one of our listeners, Citizen Radio. We are citizenradio.com.
Good job, Jamie.
There's no tweet. I was lying. And I can't confirm this, but Occupy Dallas, apparently, the police are saying that people will be prosecuted for sleeping overnight. So, you, someone who's worked so hard with this movement and have seen it come off. He's wondering, what do we do? Do you have any suggestions or advice for them?
Well, I mean, I assume they have a legal team, and if not, there are many, many pro bono lawyers that are interested in helping this movement out. And, I mean, Dallas is pretty warm compared to New York. I mean, if it takes, you know, just sleeping outside without the tent or holding up a tarp over you, I mean, this is about grit. This is about, you know, believing in something and standing up for it. So,
And I would also point out that if they're looking for you for a reason to arrest you, they're going to find any kind of old ordinance or archaic law to pull out of the books and say everybody's going to jail. You know, the fact that they haven't done that here yet is pretty extraordinary because they could have done that.
Well, I think they got a couple people early on for masks under that 1845, 1865 no masks law.
Oh, yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly a
I mean, one of the things about, you know, as the lawyers have all said, with all these charges, including the 700 arrests, that no pleas will be accepted.
Right.
I mean, all these, you fight these to the end, you know, put this in front of a jury. In fact, there's actually a class action suit by the 700 people arrested against the NYPD for entrapment and unlawful arrest and violation of civil rights. So, you know, when it comes down to it, I'm not afraid to be on the right side of this. I mean, we're just walking outside. We're meeting.
If you can't do that, what's the point of doing it?
I mean, put this in front of, you know, even a judge is scared, frankly, to try and sign off on shutting
these things down. Right. Well, I think at this point it would be such a PR nightmare where you bring this crowd in front of them and you start hearing the stories about people who have lost their homes, students who are buried in debt. To try to prosecute that would be insane.
Hey, let me ask you this. As this guy is going around, he's sort of has a look there's this sort of got a little frat vibe. Off this guy. And he's getting a little bit aggressive. To what extent is there an awareness, a concern, or just an obviousness maybe, and just that's just part of the cost of doing business, that there are both NYPD infiltrating, I mean, it's impossible for me to imagine that one of the guys sleeping here, or women, at least, is not NYPD. It would be absurd.
Well, actually, go off what you were saying, Penny Red last night said she witnessed several people from the crowd of protesters step forward with police badges and join the NYPD. So you're right. They absolutely have infiltrated. I'm sure there are still agents here. I mean, they would be stupid not to do that if they're looking to infiltrate.
I mean, the police...
You got to talk into the mic.
I'm sorry. Some of the cops that I've talked to have openly, you know, even admitted that there's no doubt CIA people here.
Right.
So, you know,
we know, as the New York Times reported, that the distinction between the CIA and NYPD has become very, very thin. They have a guy who is the head of NYPD intelligence who's still on the CIA payroll. I don't know why that story never got more play, frankly, but...
this is true, but
And I've seen pictures of NYPD counterterrorists, they got it on their jackets. That's the problem. They got to get those jackets where they can sort of rip off the decal, put it back on, rip it off, put it back on.
Yeah.
Well, what about also sort of not just NYPD, but, James O'Keefe or Andrew Breitbart sending some guy down here, and this is going to be my project. I'm going to be a douchebag for a day and hope to get on video. But I guess there's something that inoculates this crowd from that, and that, 'cause it's already given. There's going to be people here who are going to be strange to America in some way, and that has no impact on the message.
Well, that actually reminded me. Are any of you guys planning on committing acts of violence or holding over 20 milligrams of drugs? For no reason.
Don't we have to ask you at this point if you're a cop?
I mean, you could ask me that, but that's stupid. I don't know why I didn't do that.
I want to hear Jeff because he's...
One of the more interesting conversations I actually had was with a couple of cops that were kind of wandering through, and they went up to the schedule that we have on a whiteboard in the middle of the park, and they kind of joked with me, and they're like, you know, you're giving us your intel. And of course they were joking because of course they know everything that's right. going on here and every and they literally referred to us as like, you know, they can hear us up there, you know, this conversation going on right now. They know that this place is entirely wired up and they're following everything.
Let me just take this opportunity, majority.fm. If you can become a member, folks, very much appreciated.
And we are citizenradio.com.
Good job, Jamie.
So something really interesting just happened, and then I do want to get back to that because it's super fascinating and crazy and creepy. So we were kind of making fun of this guy who went crazy with the fratty vibe and was cursing and screaming and standing out front and not really the best ambassador. An older gentleman in a P-shirt went up to him and was talking to him and was clearly, he wasn't aggressive, but he was like, look, this isn't good for what we're trying to do. And they started having a conversation. And ever since then, the guy's quieted down and just started, you know, doing what he was doing before he was cursing and screaming. And since that moment, this couple with a baby actually pulled him aside, the one who was originally cursing, now that he's calmed down, and wanted to get a picture with them, with him standing next to the baby.
Yeah, and I have noticed some older protesters doing that when some of the young activists get a little aggressive, start giving the finger to the corporate areas.
That happened yesterday when we were marching.
They'll go up to them and sort of like put their hand down and say, that's not what we're doing right now.
Yep. It's cool. I mean, it's like they're sort of taking care of each other, and you know, you don't have to, you know, you don't want to stifle someone's freedom of speech, but like yet what Ali was talking about yesterday.
You don't want to give the cops an excuse to shut it all down
yes,
either.
When we were marching is, and at first I thought it was funny, is this guy, we walked by one of the banks, and this guy just started giving the middle finger, and I was like, ha ha ha. And then this older guy behind us who was in a suit and by himself, which when you see people at a protest by themselves, you're like, that is awesome. He went up to him and he kind of like, you know, gently pushed his middle finger down and made it sort of more like a Black Power sort of fist, which I thought was really cool. I'm gonna vamp.
Just keep going. There's technical difficulties.
Yeah, we're just
So back to my father's reaction to me dropping out of high school. It didn't go well.
All right. Well, you know, and I want to just tell folks, you know, apologize if the drums get a little bit loud, but there's no consensus that the drums should not be here, and so. When this is where we landed, when we first came into park, ran into Naomi Klein, definitely wanted to have an opportunity to interview her.
If you complain about the noise, you hate democracy, is what Sam's trying to say.
That's right. So, look, this is what we're going to do. It is 12:30. We've been doing this now for about an hour and a half.
Wow.
I think. And I think probably what we'll end up doing is, it's also interesting to me. I'm sorry, I just got distracted. There's just, like, guys who walk through who are just, like, clearly, you know, they're just checking it out. They're taking mental notes. They're going around. I mean, obviously, that's a big part of it. Everybody here is being cataloged. Everybody here is being, you know, this is don't be a putz. We're going to get them down the road. We'll see. But, I mean, it's just a fascinating scene, and it's something that... you know, there's a guy probably in his 70s, 80s.
Yeah. I've been telling everybody, 80s. If you live in the New York area, you should definitely check it out. You know? And if you don't live in the New York area, find a Occupy chapter by you and check that out. Because it is really, it's unlike anything you've ever seen. Well, even if you've been going to protests for years and years and years, this is not that. You
right,
know?
And Sam, I've been hypnotized by the same thing you've been, which is people start off rubbernecking. And then they're slowly, like, reading the signs and being like, well, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
And, you know, I saw these two girls who, if I saw at a bar, I would move. I would move cities. Just, like, their outfits were more expensive than our apartment. And they were walking through, and at first they looked very cynical, and then they were like, they're very organized. And they looked shocked.
I heard a, you know, executive in his $3,000 suit on the phone with his wife, and he was like, mostly kids. Yeah, it's really organized. And you could just hear in his voice that he was impressed.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that that as it grows, and the thing is that when stuff like that happens, people become more invested in what's happening here. Mm-hmm. And it also will increase the pressure as more and more people get here. Because the larger it grows, the harder it is to contain, the harder it is for the city to maintain control.
Right.
The more that they try and maintain control, the more friction there is. the more connection that outsiders have made to what's going on here, the more sympathetic they are, the less sympathetic they are towards the attempts by the police to and the city, frankly, to control it. And that's when you start to see something even grow exponential. I mean, I think it's, sadly, I think, but it's fair to say that when Tony Bologna pepper sprayed those girls, the die was cast.
Yes.
And,
for sure. You know, I think one of the other really important things is there's a march that's starting up now where they're circling the camp with the signs. Generally, when marches start, they do a kind of a one-time loop around to get everyone on. And now we see behind us a phalanx of cops that are also marching.
Yep. It looks like they're going to flank some protesters who are circulating.
And again, I mean, in a row, there was, and I saw him yesterday, he spoke pretty broken English. There was an Asian guy by himself. A man in a turban, a bunch of young kids who the news would call anarchists. An
80-year-old couple going, I support
yep.
the 99%.
There was a person in a shirt and tie by himself, like maybe like a 40-something businessman.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the string of cops. And, I mean, it's just remarkable. Nothing unites people like being fucked.
And I should say that as that... as that parade goes by, simultaneously, you know, we're on the edge of the park. And, you know, what I'd like to try and do, and we may lose broadcast. If we do, we will we'll definitely have it recorded, and we will do it. But this rig is actually mobile.
Oh, my God.
This is very impressive, Sam.
We are
admiring it.
Through a battery-operated. We learned our lesson last time.
That's very
we
nice.
We had our power, a battery-operated mixer into an iPad and a recorder, and...
Well, you know, Sam, I mean, speaking of the independent media and you guys that are down here, because, you know, we're the only ones, one of the things that I think is also brilliant about what's going on here is that it's almost teaching America that the corporate news doesn't have real news anymore. And as people struggle to find out information about this movement, they're naturally finding more independent and grassroots forms of reporting.
And then, of course, the natural result of that will be more people will support alternative media. It can grow, and then hopefully one day we'll be able to challenge, you know, the corporately controlled media.
Or at that point, frankly, things will become, I mean, I think the future of media is going to be just more and more fractured. And so there'll be more sort of, everything will be a lot more a la carte.
I don't know if I said this the last time you had us on the show. Allison and I actually have to split. If you're in New York and debating coming to Occupy Wall Street, I'm actually performing there tonight after the General Assembly at 9:30. And like Naomi was saying, I'm bringing a pretty huge celebrity with me who's a musician who's going to be performing because he's so into the idea. I can't
you're not
say
who.
I can't say who it is, but it's awesome.
Wait, who?
Radiohead.
It's Radiohead again. Prepare to be disappointed. So that'll be at 9:30 tonight.
Who is it?
I'll tell you when we... I'll text you.
Well,
I can't because it'll be pandemonium.
Really? Oh, really?
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Bono.
It's Bono.
Yeah, exactly.
It is... But what I wanted to say, and I don't know if I said this last time, but, you know, there's sort of been this fake feud between Citizen Radio and the assholes that listen to Majority Report. And what you just said was really interesting because Sam... I didn't know Sam before we got Citizen Radio to go public. Janine Garofalo, this is a long story just to say I'm friends with Janine Garofalo. When we were desperate and we were going to lose all of our money from the station that was paying us, I asked Janine if she knew anyone I could talk to, and she said, talk to Sam. And I talked to you, and you gave us all this advice on how to start up independently, and I remember being really self-conscious because I was like, well, aren't we technically competition? You know, there aren't many podcasts like ours. And what you
gave
said to me,
you all fake advice.
It's not a competition if we won, right?
Oh, right. No, yeah, I guess I guess you're right.
The first thing I said was, you don't have to record anything.
Yeah. No, just yell really loudly from your apartment. But what you said was, we need as many shows like this as possible. And we need guys like you to donate to Majority Report and, you know, Democracy Now and all these different shows. And, you know, what we should be doing is really creating our own network that gets so big that the mainstream media can't ignore it or fucking shut them out of business.
Word.
So,
amen.
So I wanted to thank you. We have to split because I got to get ready for this thing tonight.
Thank you, Sam.
But yeah, thanks, man.
Send you guys.
And thanks for doing this with us. Yeah, and our show, it's 5 days a week. It's WeAreCitizenRadio.com. It's totally free. You can listen to both of us. And please
you
do.
You should listen to both of us.
For all the Citizen Radio listeners, this is Sam Cedar. He's very nice. And and yeah, thank you guys again. Thanks for doing this, Sam.
Blast.
Thank you.
We should do this again.
Yeah, let's definitely do it again.
Yes.
Maybe
I will bring the drums.
Next time we'll get a different location. But in the meantime, all right, folks, we'll be back live tomorrow. Same time, Friday, casual Friday. And we'll have some, hopefully, may stick around, do some more interviews, and provide it for you tomorrow. All right, and so let me just, Jeff, just keep talking. Allison, Jamie, just keep talking until I pull up the music.
Allison and I are both on Twitter. Also, Allison blogs at thenation.com.
Well, now I'm also going to be blogging for In These Times.
Oh, that's right.
As well.
Oh, and if you're in New York City, I'm doing a big political stand-up show, CD release party at Gotham Comedy Club Tuesday night. And Occupy Wall Street.
Yes.
All right, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member, by going to justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Donate at youraccount.com/MajorityFM or Citizens Radio. See you tomorrow.